Here, the old gods are dead.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, y'all. This is the Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca with Liam.
Oh, we started recording. Hi, gay.
Hi, gay. Happy Pride. We're late because I had COVID. Was it last week we were meant to release an episode?
Yes.
No, me being dramatic and coughing right now. That was because I just hit my jaw. But I was sick last week. Missed Pride in Edinburgh also. Because even though I had a week off in no doing anything and just being in my house, like I was actually quite ill, I still managed to run myself so skint that I couldn't go and Pride.
You should have just lied and said you were still ill.
I know.
You should have just lied.
Money matters more. No, I did catch COVID on the best night out that Fife's ever seen, and I'll never see the likes again. I was in PJs in Dunfermline and they were playing beat after beat. Like, the DJ was that good that I was up at the bar getting like a Moretti or something, and like Big Country and a Big Country came on. So like I was like, right, fuck this, and just went back to the dance floor. And then he put on Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush.
Oh,
so essentially, it was a gay bar.
Yeah, it was like this was for the queer women in the room. It was Pride Month.
It was, and then I had my like I was that Stephen that had my sunglasses on inside, and then on this Monday after it, I was like, I'm really sick. Like, surely this isn't a 2 day hangover. And then on the Tuesday, like, did a COVID test and sent it to Liam. And I was like, what does this faded light mean? And you were like, bitch, you've got COVID. I was like, slowly, like, in the car park in my work, looking at my text messages, like, sweating. And I was like, no, I actually need to go. So I sided with my girlfriend because she had just had COVID. So,
no, but you were like, that's mid fever delirium. And you were like, what does this faint line mean? Like, if like everything isn't adding up to you, you're done.
I phoned my mum and I was like, can you please look at this COVID test? And she was like, that's really positive now. Like, she went upstairs and checked it. And I was like, oh, fuck's sake. I was like, right. So just stayed. I watched Lord of the Rings, watched many an episode of The X-Files as well, had many epiphanies. I'm still watching The X-Files. The last time I watched The X-Files, it took me like literally 2 years.
I've literally not ever watched it the whole way through.
It's so
I want to. It looks like something I would enjoy in its entirety. I've seen episodes here and there.
It was good to just pick up.
I mean, I watched a lot of gay movies during Pride Month.
Oh, so you did. Please spell. Give us recommendations.
Okay, so they're both like they both start with the word fire, which I love, and they're very different movies. So there's one called Fire Island, which is like a gay rom-com, but it's about like, you know, like the Fire Island festival.
I was going to say, I was like, is that no documentary?
No, but there's like a narrow rom-com version of it. And I've got to say, it was so, so like gutted and rotten. it was good to see like gay people allowed to be happy. This contradicts the other film. Anyway, it was good to see the like, gay people can have rom-coms too. But like, oh my god, like I saw tweets about like, if these two aren't the next big actors in the world's doing something wrong. And I was like, they were both terrible. And like the two main actors, they were both, I'm sorry to these men, but they were both terrible.
What is it called? Fire
Actually,
Island?
I don't know their genders.
Hold on, I'm googling this. Oh, it looks gutted and rotted.
Yeah. But, like, it's fun.
It looks like Love Island. It looks like gay Love Island.
It kind of, like, that's the plot of the film, pretty much. But, like, I mean, that's what Fire Island is in its entirety. But, yeah, I mean, I would still recommend it. It was very fun. And me and Nereus were drinking wine and watching it and just, like, giggling the whole way through. And it was so predictable. Like, everything that I thought would happen would happen. There's some oddly very serious, like, themes addressed as well.
That drugs. No. Kind of
drugs, like, sexual assault, taking advantage of someone and using your OnlyFans, racism. The racism, I could see, like, you could work that into the film. But, like, the other two, like, they just felt so, like, I was side-blinded by that. Like, I was like, oh.
Rom-com, when?
Yeah, I know. I was like, why was I giggling and then this? But mm-hmm. I guess that's, like, real. The other one was called Firebird. And it was, like, it's, like, a USSR-era gay romance in, like, Estonian military of the USSR. Mm-hmm. It was really good. Although there was this one small scene, where there was CGI, and I was like, it's bad.
Like, speaking of the X-Files.
if you don't have the budget for the CGI, just don't do it. Like, practical effects, I'm such a big proponent of them. They're so good. Like, just use practical effects. They're time-old, and they look better most of the time.
I'm a slut for practical effects. Like, I think I seen, like, the first new Star Wars, and they used a lot of practical effects in that, which I appreciated, like, where it looked normal, and then sometimes they use CGI.
Yeah.
As somebody who's just recently watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which I'm pretty sure won awards for its CGI, like, it looks so busted and rotten. So, like, if there's an option not to use your CGI, that's like when, remember
it,
when Avatar,
really fast.
When Avatar, like, dominated the world for, like, its graphics and stuff like that. Like, now when you watch it, you're like, oof.
Ooh. Why does his nose move like that? You know?
Aye.
Yeah,
new
actually,
Avatar coming out, though.
I do not want to see it. Like, I didn't enjoy the first one at the time, and it wasn't just like a hipster contrarian, like, I don't
know.
No, like
it's
it. Like,
shit.
It's boring.
Like, it's so boring. Sigourney Weaver's in it though. Work.
I was having beef with Avatar and June. Feels like we just hate men. But
like, just release the director's cut of Titanic. Give the gays what they want.
Release the 40-hour improv version of Bridesmaids. Give the gays what they want.
That's all we want. What else? I've been in a deep place of wanting to watch Little Women 2019. I've yet to get around to doing it, though. I think mentally I can't do it. When Greta Gerwig's version of Little Women came out in 2019, I seen it in the cinema 6 times.
I saw it twice.
That is the lesbian in you.
Yeah, but that's very sick of you, like, that's sick.
One time I seen it, bad sick. Yeah, one time when I seen it, I was on holiday in Dublin, and I was like, we should just go and see Little Women. We're all, like, hungover waiting on a flight in the Odeon or the View or whatever in Dublin. It was good, though.
We'd recommend it.
But I really do want to watch it, but I've got to pick my moments, like, because I'm on holiday to work right now. So I need to decide when I want to be absolutely desolate in my emotions.
Yeah, I watched it today, I can't lie. But then I text Nereus and was like, can we go to the beach on Saturday?
Can you take me to the beach like a little waif?
I need to cure my consumption. I need to go to the beach. I've got scarlet fever.
I was talking to my nana when I was in my Little Women era, and I would never shut up about it. And I was like, oh, and when Beth had scarlet fever, she was like, I had scarlet fever twice. I was like, oh.
One up.
She was like, I was born in, like, the 40s. And I was like, fair. I was, like, so shocked. I was like, what? Anywho,
wait,
born survivor.
And she's, like, alive. Wait, is she still alive?
Yeah.
Damn. Good for her.
Queen.
Wait, how old is she? 87.
I was born on her 50th birthday, so she's 74.
Oh. For some reason it felt like she would be older. Good for her, having
scarlet fever twice. She's had scarlet fever twice, died once.
Can she still hear fine?
Resurrected once. Oh no, she's deaf as fuck.
Yeah, because like, didn't the guy in Glee have scarlet fever?
Yeah, Roomba had scarlet fever as a kid, leaving him deaf. Right.
No, I think my nana's. I think my nana's deaf because she used to work in a factory. She never wears her hearing aids though, and when you talk to her, she just sits and smiles. I'm like, you ignorant bitch, put your hearing aids in. And she's like, I do like wearing them.
They make me look old.
Smile, she's like, I'm no vain, I do want to put my hearing aids in. And I'm like, what?
That's like the opposite, no?
I know. I'm like, it's not like it's your dentures, Nana. Just put your hearing aids in. So the day we're going to be talking about past podcast topic, James VI, and we're going to go through his life and times and his lovers, because he's like the only queer person in Scottish history, according to the internet. So we're going to do a wee deep dive on him, and we'll go away on a break, and then we'll come back and we'll get into it.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So James VI was born on the 19th of June in 1566 at Edinburgh Castle. He's the only child of Mary Queen of Scots and her cousin husband, Henry Stuart. Lord Darnley. It's important to note that both Mary and Darnley were great-grandchildren of Henry VII of England through Margaret Tudor, the sister of Henry VIII.
Where?
Yeah, that's how he gets like a shoo-in to be the... It was kind of on purpose,
yeah.
This, so he could eventually become King of England. Obviously, James is most well-known for being the Witch Hunter King and then also for succeeding the last Tudor monarch, Elizabeth I. And he would become the first king to reign over all three kingdoms of Scotland, England and Ireland. And he was also the reigning monarch when the English colonisation of the Americas began.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah, already starting his villain origins, like, really quick.
Real fast.
James was baptised as a Catholic at a ceremony held at Stirling Castle on the 17th of December in 1566. Apparently, Mary refused to let the Archbishop of St Andrews, who she called a pocky priest, spit in baby James's mouth, which was a custom at the time. It was like a good luck thing, like maybe like to build up immunity or something, just to like hawk into like a baby's mouth. And she like didn't like look at him, so she was like, fuck that. And apparently it caused a wee bit of a stir in the court.
You're fugly, do not spit in my baby's mouth.
So James was actually separated from his mother when he was just under a year old, and I'll spare loads of details, but I will give a basic rundown of how James and Mary became separated. I will like clarify, Mary did love James and spent the remainder of her life missing him constantly. even though there's no much said on what James thought of Mary. He did say that her trial and execution was a bit of a fuss.
Taking a real stand here.
The Olsen twins get vaguely political.
Mary inherited a very insecure reign from the get-go as Protestant noblemen in Scotland started to rebel against her as she was a Catholic ruler. Darnley, her husband, plotted with these noblemen in the murder of Mary's secretary and alleged lover, David Rizzio, whilst Mary was pregnant with James. Darnley was murdered in an explosion at Holyrood Palace, and Mary, who was already unpopular for being Catholic, became a quick suspect, as this was thought to be a revenge killing for Rizzio's murder. After this, Mary was imprisoned in Lochleven Castle by Protestant noblemen, and she never seen her son again after that. And spoiler alert, she ended up going to England, and then she was put on trial for treason there and was beheaded. Well, day Mary, obviously, she'll get like a two-part episode or something, but before all that, Mary abdicated for the throne in favour of James in July 1567, leaving her illegitimate half-brother James Stuart, Earl of Moray, as regent. Young James is then entrusted to a pair of Scottish nobles in the security of Stirling Castle, where he ascended to the throne when he was only 13 months old. His coronation speech was preached by the leader of the Scottish Protestant Reformation, John Knox, after which James was brought up as a member of the Church of Scotland. From James's childhood to his adolescence, he was taught by a group of Protestant tutors. The most notable of these was George Buchanan, who would batter James in order to turn him into a God-fearing Protestant. Considering what we can for the episode that we did on the witch trials, it would appear that this worked, because James was very much paranoid of God and the devil all at once. James was proclaimed an adult ruler when he was 13, and it was during these years that the king had managed to like build up his own court and like had like favourites and stuff. And the most famous of them was Esme Stuart. And Liam's going to tell you how much your favourite Esme was.
I will, but like, a preface, the whole episode is fucked up. The whole episode's fucked up. The age gaps are not appropriate. But anyway, so Esme Stuart was a Franco-Scottish lord of Daubigny, I think it said. At the time he met James VI, however, he was also a 37-year-old father of five.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I love how they put it, didn't that he's his lover.
Yeah, he's like an adamant, and there is a lot of evidence of him being a lover and a lot of acts that just substantiate that. But he was more than double his age and had five children, the oldest of which was only 5 or 6 years younger than James. Take from that what you will. He was also described by Sir James Melville, a writer and diplomat of the time, as being an upright, just and gentle in nature, which I assume is just like a subtle way of calling him a faggot. Like, it's the 1570s way of saying like he's like a pleasure to have in class, he's always polite, his handwriting is nice. It's like that sort of thing.
That's like a really nice description, I'm considering that he's definitely a paedophile,
a groomer for sure. Stuart was like an exotic French man who captivated young James, who was 13. James, effectively seeing him for the first time, was like, I'm gonna break me off that. that's the easiest way to put it. It is well established that the two became very close very fast, and it's been observed that James was so openly in love with him that he would clasp him around the neck and kiss him, like very Princess Bride, very Notebook, like,
oh my god,
arms around the neck.
Oh no.
Yeah,
not good in court.
No, the whole thing just makes me like, I hate it. Like, I love how they're like, yes, queer Scotland, and they're like omitting the fact that it's like
Jesus Christ, like he's definitely just did this so he could like become more significant in court. That's fucking horrible.
Well, yes and no. So, oh dear. Initially, James made Stuart a gentleman of the bedchamber, which is a title that was first used in the 11th century and was given to those who were to assist the monarch in getting dressed, or in this case, probably undressed as well, waiting on the king while he eats, guarding the entry to the chamber, all while providing company to the king. I feel as though it doesn't take a rocket scientist to like figure out why he was promoted to this title.
Yeah.
To be in the chambers often. From this position, Stuart somehow found a way to rapidly accelerate through the titles of Privy Council Member, Earl, and finally the Duke of Lennox. This title was actually first created for Esme by James and was later recreated by Charles I, James's son, for the second time in 1675 for his extramarital son known as Charles Lennox. Charles Lennox is actually Annie Lennox's great, 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 great uncle. That's a lie.
Are you taking the piss?
I'm lying. Reacting to me lying, but you all believed me for a second, didn't you? Tale as old as time, Prosby Catholics comes into play. The largely Presbyterian Scotland was outraged at a Catholic Duke being appointed, so Esme had to pick his faith or his title, of which he picked his title. Now, I personally believe this did definitely start out just as a groomer grifting a barely teen with too much power, which like sort of goes to say like maybe we shouldn't put like literal children in such positions of power. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, maybe that's where they went wrong. Who am I to judge? I'm someone who can judge. That's fucked up. Yeah. Anyway, but like a lot of sources do say that like he did have a lot of loyalty and love for James. The church, because of this, never trusted Esme, and so nobleman ended up inviting James to Ruthven Castle as a guest, but pulled the old switcheroo on him, imprisoned him for 10 months in an event that is now known as the Raid of Ruthven, led by William Ruthven, the first Earl of Gowrie. This began what was known as the short-lived Gowrie regime, where they forced James to banish Esme back to France, but the two ended up keeping a secret correspondence where the excommunicated Duke swears he left his family for James, and shortly after he ended up dying. And see, after he died, he sent James, he had his embalmed heart sent to James.
Like, shut up.
His embalmed heart. So I guess they were in love, but this is fucked up. I truly believe having to excommunicate the man that he loved is when his psyche snapped. Because later on he becomes unhinged, which we already touched upon, like he loved a witch hunt. You can cover more on that, I guess, now.
Yeah. In 1582, James is liberated. In the following year, he gained increasing control for the Protestant nobility and the church by pushing through laws called the Black Acts, which essentially just gave more power to the monarchy. James is a prolific writer, and he was a really big believer in, what is it called, the divine right of kings. So he was very adamant that the church should not have as much power, which is true. Separate church and state, yeah. But also separate state and monarchy. he published loads of papers on loads of different things. Like, we've covered it before, he published Demonology, which is about witchcraft. He was actually the first person to ever write an anti-smoking ad, because he was very against smoking, which was really popular at the time. And then he's obviously wrote an essay called The Divine Right of Kings. It probably his earlier life and his troubles with the church and the Protestant nobility probably heavily inspired his belief in the Divine Right of Kings. Anyway, he's still a young boy at this point. So a few years later, in 1586, James signed the Treaty of Berwick, which is a peace agreement between the kingdoms of Scotland and England. This essentially set in stone his ascension to the throne of England once the unmarried and childless Elizabeth I died. During this point in his life, James is praised by the Kirk and the Protestant lords in his younger years for his chastity, as he showed little interest in women, which suits Protestants, but I wonder why he was so chaste and why he didn't have much interest in women. Eventually, pressures mounted to strengthen the monarchy, which meant marriage was necessary, and the choice was made for James to marry the 14-year-old Anne of Denmark. At this point, James would be 23. James sailed with a party of 300 to personally collect Anne, and the couple were then married at the Bishop's Palace in Oslo on November 23rd. So you might remember that in episode 4, we mentioned that James's time in Denmark heavily influenced his reign. The court in Copenhagen was rife with rumours and superstitions surrounding witchcraft and witch hunts. This was said to have heavily influenced the god and devil fearing James. And on his return to Scotland the following May, his ships were caught in bad storms, which he blamed on several people in North Berwick. The king would then conduct his first major persecution of witchcraft under the Witchcraft Act of 1563, another thing that he penned. He personally arrested, trialled and executed those he blamed for the bad weather. If you want to hear more about that, please listen to episode 4, The North Berwick Witch Trials. I'll leave it to Liam to tell us a wee bit about who Annie Denmark was.
Yeah, so she was born in 1574, which bears repeating, makes her 14 years old, I believe, when her and James got married. It is said that she was like deeply, like it's established, she was like deeply infatuated and like giddy almost to be marrying James. But like later on, an English spy, Thomas Fowler, suggests that despite how infatuated Anne is with James, they aren't compatible because she isn't really his type, implying he's a fruit. Regardless, they were married by proxy and Anne ended up being coronated in the Abbey Church in Holyrood in 1590.
I wonder how that was for James, being like, oh, this is where your daddy got killed.
Yeah.
I wonder how that made him feel. How does it make royals feel? I don't know.
I don't think they have feelings. I really don't. Like, I truly think they are they're incapable of feeling things and sweating. But, oh well, I guess. Early in their relationship, James was actually very taken with Anne, but they quickly began to fight, remaining married. From what I understand, both of them, though, were repeatedly involved in, like, cheating scandals. One of the most popular of which is James's mistress, Anne Murray, later referred to as Lady Glamis. In 1594, however, Anne did eventually bear the couple's first son, Prince Henry, who died before both of his parents from scarlet fever. Full circle moment. But anyway, the couple had a further two children, Princess Elizabeth, who became the Queen of Bohemia, and Charles I, who succeeded his father as king.
He's the daddy, Charles II of horrible history's fame.
Yeah, he did that. Things he did, that.
So it's important to note that during this point in James's life, as he's got mayor power back off the Kirk and the witch trials and stuff like all this, like he's making big moves politically in Scotland. And I would like to note that by no means do I like James VI, and this kind of just really drills it home for me. During his reign, the peoples of the Highlands and Islands faced like big persecutions, and also the decline of the Gaelic language had begun. Gaelic was once the language of kings. Mary Queen of Scots' father, James V, actually was fluent in Gaelic, but under James VI's rule, it truly began to decline as he wasn't taught it by his Protestant tutors. In this time, Gaelic became known as Erse or Irish, implying that it was foreign, and the Scottish Parliament decided it was the cause of the Highlanders' shortcomings, and abolition truly came on the table at this point. I know.
That's horrible.
I know. So James VI then authorised the Gentlemen Adventures of Fife, which was to civilise the barbarous Isle of Lewis. This was essentially a violent colonisation of the isle. Ultimately, the colonists were driven out by the islanders, but later attempts were successful. And because of the Reformation being slower, like the Protestant Reformation being slower in the Gaelic-speaking parts of Scotland, so began the need for the destruction of the Gaelic language, the destruction of the traditional culture, and the suppression of its bearers. I'm quoting, by the way. Like, that isn't it, like that's actually, like, what the Scottish Parliament wanted at the time. So, like, when I think this as well, and a lot of people think that It was the Battle of Culloden that really started the decline of Highland culture. It wasn't. It was this.
I thought like, it was the Battle of Culloden.
This is when it truly begins. This is the start of the Jacobean era, to be fair. But it's at this point when Highland culture really is lost.
You know the tweet, Niall should letterbomb you. Me, but it's like
Guy Fawkes should letterbomb you. So that's kind of it in black and white, that James is a total cunt, and then we've also got like his infidelities and stuff like that. In the 1600s and the 1610s, it becomes really clear that James is the heir to the English throne once Elizabeth I dies. English politicians and lords actually kept a secret correspondence with James to prepare him for his succession. Because James is Protestant and raised Protestant, it basically makes him a shoo-in. Robert Cecil, the Queen Elizabeth's chief minister, sent James a draft proclamation of his accession to the English throne in March 1603. Elizabeth would later die that month on March 24th, and James would be declared King of England later the same day. Like, they didn't hang about.
That's fast turnover.
The English court, I don't know if, I don't think the lords in the English court were particularly fond of Elizabeth. Oh, I think they were fond of her because one, she refused to get married, and two, she refused to have children.
And three, she was a woman.
Yeah, three, she was a woman, and four, she was like absolutely mental and bald because she had been using lipids and makeup her entire life.
I always imagine her actually, like I see pictures of her, and I always imagine like her actually looking like the Fat Controller from Thomas the Tank Engine. Like, I feel like that's what she looked like.
No, she would have looked like if you covered a balloon in like paper mache and let it dry. That's actually what she would have looked like. But like with a ginger wig on. Like it's like there is like because obviously like in royal courts people would visit the other places and they would document stuff, and there's various descriptions of people outside the United Kingdom describing Elizabeth's appearance as being like absolutely horrid.
They got home and said, remember that time RuPaul looked busted AF?
So James left Edinburgh on April 5th and he promised to return once every 3 years to Scotland. This is a promise he didn't keep, however. Can you guess how many times James visited Scotland during his reign?
One time,
and he left very quickly after that. On his journey to England, he was met with luxurious hospitality by the local gentry. He was clearly so impressed that he said he was swapping a stony couch for a deep feather bed.
Anything? He can swap that feather bed for these hands if he keeps talking.
I would just like to say Mary Queen of Scots would have done the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. She would have come maybe 3 times.
Yeah.
But it was like, that was her bag. Like, she wanted the throne of England really badly. So he was coronated on July 25th at Westminster Abbey. The early years of his reign were faced with debts due to the growing cost of England's wars in Ireland, as well as two conspiracies to remove him from the throne. These were known as the Byplot and the Main Plot. However, these seem trivial when they're compared to the infamous gunpowder plot.
Love. So camp. Wish she had been successful. So many explosive plots that I wish in history had gone ahead. Some of them
Margaret
were...
Margaret Thatcher.
So I was about to say some of them more recent.
Anyway, the gunpowder plot has been voted the 6th most significant moment in English history, and the traditions that go along with it are still very much alive. So, what actually happened? Guy Fawkes is a radical Catholic protester, and he's found in the cellars of the Houses of Parliament on the night of November 5th, 1605. This is the eve of the state opening of James's English Parliament session for the second time. He was found by guards standing watch over a pile of wood and kindling, not far from 36 barrels of gunpowder. Politicians at the time who were fearful of Catholics assumed Fawkes was there to blow up the barrels once Parliament was in session the next day and to cause murder and destruction. And to be fair, I think this is a pretty fair assumption considering he was stood next to a pile of kindling that was no far away from gunpowder.
I just imagine him like kicking it away with his feet like, wasn't he me?
Do you care where the toilet is?
Oh, I seem to have gotten lost.
James said that Fawkes intended to cause the destruction of not only my person, nor my wife and posterity also, but the whole body of state in general. And I wish he had. The gunpowder plot, as it quickly becomes known, has a positive effect on the image of the king, and there was a great sense of relief throughout the country upon hearing the plot was unsuccessful and that the king and his heirs were unharmed. Fawkes and his conspirators were tortured and executed shortly thereafter. During this point in James's life in England and in the English court, I believe he quickly finds a new favourite, Liam.
So James's new favourite was George Villiers, the first Duke of Buckingham. He was born in Leicestershire in 1592, making him around 30 years younger than James.
Christ.
And only 2 years older than James's eldest child. It's lovely how we've come full circle on this, because James used to be that girl. Villiers was the son of a nobleman, and as a boy, his mother sent him to France, where he learned to dance, fence, and speak the language. Now, if that ain't fruity, I don't know what is. He was also later described as the handsomest bodied man in England, with limbs so well compacted, and his conversation so pleasing, and of so sweet a disposition, by the Bishop of Gloucester. Everyone in this saga, fruity. The bishop said that about him. When I saw the quote and then it said Bishop of Gloucester, I lost it. Like, I was literally crying laughing. Like, the bishop! Anyway, when he was 21, so he was an adult, so this is getting less murky than before, his looks were noticed by the king himself, whom he literally pretty much used his hotness and ability to dance to woo the king. Like, he used him to woo James, which I kind of respect. Like, he's on the hustle. The nature of the relationship between James and Villiers as he rose through knighthood and eventually to becoming the Duke of Buckingham was disputed, but many believe there was a lot of kissing and cuddling going on. The king even had a nickname for Villiers. He called him Steenie. I don't know what that means, but he called him Steenie. Isn't that cute? Amidst all the rumours, of their affair, James addressed it by saying the most melodramatic and gay thing I have ever heard. But I'm going to summarize it because I can't be bothered saying the whole thing because it's a lot. Like, this man liked to write. He liked to write.
Yeah, he really liked.
He's kind of like you.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Bisexuals who like to write, and that's a bit it. That's where it ends.
I nearly fell off my chair. anyway, he said, I, James, am neither a god nor an angel, but a man like any other. Yada, yada. I love the Earl of Buckingham more than anyone else. And people were still like disputing it. He literally said the words, I love the Earl of Buckingham more than anyone else.
More than my wife.
He said more than anyone here. He literally said more than anyone here in the whole like big quote.
I'm sure that made him really popular.
So yeah, well, I was very curious after reading this because I was like, that is like a TV show. That's like something that would happen in a TV show. So I did a little searching of the internet and I was like, I wonder if they do fan fiction about historical figures.
Oh no.
And I found one fan fiction on Archive of Our Own, you can read it if you want, called Steenie, that is categorized as post-sex fluff, and it was written by someone called Sophia 256.
Credit where credit's due.
The greatest author of our time. And I'm really obsessed with it. And they tried making James really Scottish for some reason. I was like, I thought he hated Scotland, but he says... One of the quotes is, my God, George, the king sighed with adoration. Your face, ellipses, you simply look divine. And then there's a bit at the end where he's like, he keeps calling him like your majesty and stuff. And James says, for Christ's sakes, you can call me James.
It's just, that's out of character.
It's unhinged. Anyway, best 373 word story I've ever read, and I was in genuine tears laughing at it. God bless you, Sophia 25265 or what, 256? Yeah. God bless you. Yeah, that's his other favorite.
His most favorite, I would say.
Yeah. It was definitely the first one and the last one. The two Frenchies were his favorites.
So this takes place in the later parts of James's life. His reign is actually the longest of any Scottish monarch, and really? He did have a relatively successful reign in England, and he made it imperative to steer clear of any religious wars. He did get involved much to his displeasure. He was kind of pushed into it. He had to continue the war in Ireland, apparently.
Had to.
Because that's something that Elizabeth I had already done, but he was kind of pushed into a war with Spain during his reign. By members of his court, he actually didn't want to do it. But he did steer clear of any religious wars. And by the later years of his life, James had begun to suffer severely from arthritis, kidney stones, and gout, which seems to be a very royal disease, gout.
Yeah, well, it's a build-up of uric acid in your joints, making little crystals, but it comes from, like, really rich foods. Mm-hmm. So it's because they ate, like, all just, like, the gamiest meats and shit, and didn't...
Yeah.
So... They all did have gout, and it basically caused like swelling. So it's a shame they didn't have ibuprofen, but that's done then.
So by all accounts, he had lost all his teeth, and he was very much an alcoholic at this point. And in the last year of his life, in 1625, he was too ill to reign, with much of his control going to his son and heir, Charles. During this time, James even described his own urine as being the dark red colour of Alicante wine due to his kidney issues being so severe. James would die on March 27th in 1625 in Hertfordshire during a very bad attack of dysentery. News would reach George Villiers on the battlefield in France, where apparently he broke down into tears and sobbed uncontrollably.
That's so sad.
Oh. James would be buried in Westminster Abbey, where during his reign he had reinterred the body of his mother. However, the position of James's tomb would be lost to time until it was found again during renovations in the 19th century. And that is The Life and Times and the Lovers of King James VI of Scotland and First of England.
Fruit. Big
a fruit. By all accounts.
A fruit and a creep. A fruit, a creep, and a scoundrel. You're a Elvis. Scoundrel, and I just can't stand it.
But I think that's us off our historical bullshit. We just had issues recording, so we just had to do like the end bit again, yeah, where we got into like our really deep, smart, intelligent, religious discourse.
Yeah, you didn't
history.
Hear it. We were so smart about Christianization of like Europe and how it was like damaging to like indigenous cultures and druidry and paganism and like all the rich historical history, and you just missed it. But we sounded really smart, like the first time ever.
Really smart.
It happens like once every 20 episodes. We're on episode 20.
And I'll never reach anybody's ears.
I can't believe that. I was so upset.
I know. Like literally, like we were recorded and I was like, Liam, I'm gonna phone you back to see if this saved this whole episode, because we've been recording for like 2 hours now. But just to get back on track, if you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at The Creepy Wee Pod, Instagram at The Creepy Wee Podcast, TikTok at The Creepy Wee Podcast. You can send us an email to thecreepyweepodcast@gmail.com, and you can visit our website, thecreepyweepodcast.co.uk, and you can leave us a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And that's us until the next episode. Love
you,
bye.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.